Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Tass Thacker and Bruce Junik have traveled the world on their bicycles. They are explorers, adventurers, authors, photographers, and teachers. They present the program Cuba Libre at The Journey in Rapid City on April 6 and 8. And they join us now from the SDPB studios in Rapid City. Tass and Bruce, welcome to In the Moment.
Thank you. It's nice to be a part of your show.
Thanks.
All right, let's do some little background first, because you've traveled to a whole lot of places and on your bicycle, and let's just start by talking about why. What inspired, you know, that journey to begin with?
We had been saving our money for years back in the early 1980s and thought we wanted to go to Nepal and see Mount Everest, and we thought we'd just travel regular through buses and trains and things. And then about a couple years before we were going to leave, I started doing some bike racing. And I talked Bruce into getting a bicycle, and we ended up liking it so much that we decided, well, maybe we'd just try this trip on bicycle. And we thought, well, we've never done anything like this before, so we'll start in Spearfish, and we'll ride to California, and if we don't like it, we'll just ship the bikes back and then travel the way we originally thought. But we ended up just loving it.
And we ended up riding around the world. The trip ended up taking us 26 months, and we rode over 14,000 miles around the world.
All right, so how did, you know, Bruce, when Tass first said, hey, how about a bicycle? Were you thinking that far ahead?
You know, not really. But she said it was so much fun, and I remembered when I was a young kid having a bike and how much fun I had on a bike. So I was pretty easy sell. And we were out on a training ride. Tass was training for triathlons, and one day we rode all through Custer State Park, and it was just a beautiful day. And that was that evening as we were eating supper. It was Tass's idea. She said, you know, we've been talking about going to Asia. Let's just bicycle to Asia. And I was immediately convinced that that was a grand idea. Let's do.
All right. So not to spend too much time on the early years, but that's a huge relationship commitment, because you get out there, it's just the two of you on your bikes.
Exactly.
How did you sort of prepare yourselves from a relationship perspective?
Well, we had traveled together. We met as ski bums in Jackson, Wyoming in the mid-70s, and we spent two winters in Central America, in southern Mexico and Guatemala, studying Maya ruins and birds just on our own, and beach life on the Caribbean. And so we knew that we were really good traveling companions. So the next step was just finding out how we would like bicycling, and we both just fell in love with it immediately. Tass is a former swim champion, and we're both, as I said, skiers, so we're both real athletic people. And the idea of traveling on bicycle and having a workout and yet having at the end of each day that great fulfillment of a sense of you really accomplished something, and also traveling very slowly so we could talk and meet with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It was just, we loved everything about it.
We have a really unusual relationship, because we spend almost 24 hours a day together. And I know for a lot of people that sounds kind of horrifying. In fact, people come up and tell us that all the time. They say, oh my gosh, I don't know what I'd do if my husband retires and he's home all the time, or vice versa. But we just get along so well. We're just best friends, and
we laugh all the time.
We have a lot of laughs. Yeah.
There's a real compatibility there, and you know, desire to do the same thing. Do you see the world in the same way, or do you both bring different sort of, you know, perspective to that travel that you appreciate about one another?
Well, it's interesting, because when we first started traveling, I was the main photographer, and over the years Bruce has started making photos too, and that became very obvious from the beginning, from the very first trip that we went together, that we both see things a lot differently. I'm very detail oriented. Most of my photos are patterns, design, color, or people, and Bruce is definitely a wide angle person. So when I go into a market, say, I just shoot, you know, the patterns of the people's clothes, or the pattern, the way they laid the food out. And Bruce actually takes a picture of the market itself. And we realized right away, if we were making a slideshow with just my slides, it wouldn't really be a complete program. But by including the big picture, then you can actually appreciate the small details even more.
Yeah. Tass, what have you come to appreciate about the small details of Bruce over years of traveling with him that you didn't really fully appreciate when you first hit the road?
Oh, that's an interesting question. he's so easygoing, and he always looks at the positive sides of things, and that really comes out when we're traveling and in sometimes really stressful situations when, you know, we can't communicate, we can't figure out where to go. He always just has a real even keel about him that's really good, where I tend to get kind of a little more dramatic and it's like, oh, what's going on? I don't know. And I didn't see that as much when we were here in the States, but that really comes out a lot when we're traveling.
Bruce, what's the big picture about TAS that you appreciate that maybe you didn't quite fully understand at the beginning?
Definitely, I'd say her sense of humor. Mm-hmm. She's really funny. She's really good at making jokes. In fact, when hard things do happen, we're really fast at making a funny punchline about something that was just uncomfortable and then continuing to joke about it for months on end afterwards. And just incredible strength. TAS is a really good just never gives up. She, in fact, when things go really hard, usually if there's a time for us to stop for the evening or anything like that, I have to be the one to say it. She'll never say, let's stop, unless I finally say, this is crazy, we need to just stop and rest. So she can go forever. And I've also found that if we are having really long days in the saddle, the best thing for me to do is to pace off of her. Yeah. Because I can have a tendency to get a little excited, and everything's really good, and all morning long I'm riding a little faster than I should be because it's such a beautiful day. Then late in the evening, all of a sudden, it's like, Ma, I am running out of gas. So,
what happened?
Yeah, where did all my energy go?
At what point does this become something that you create slideshows and start doing the presentations and bringing the journey back to, you know, school children and communities and others?
Well, we were when we came back from our Around the World bike trip, we were editing some of our photos, and we ended up staying with a friend of ours who was in charge of teacher in-services for the Rapid City School System. And when he'd come home in the evening and start looking at some of our photos, he said, hey, I'm putting together a teacher in-service, and the teachers are all complaining that these in-services are getting really boring and we're doing the same thing. And he said, how about if I pay you $1,000? And we're like, what? $1,000? And he said, you could put together a couple shows and do them at the in-service. Well, we did that over a series of days and had so many teachers come up.
700 teachers.
And ask us if we could come to their school and do something like that for the students. And that's really where the idea came about.
That was in 1987. We did it 3 years part-time. And then 1990, we quit our other jobs and committed ourselves full-time to Images of the World. That's our company. And since 1987, we've had 1.8 million students have seen our slideshows now.
Wow.
None of them in Vermilion.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. What's up with Vermilion?
Vermilion, you're next.
Yeah, that's right.
They're listening right now.
That's right. Sioux Falls has been good to us. Vermilion, I don't know.
Vermilion Public School. Imagesoftheworld.com. Go figure it out, because you are missing out. They've been left behind because they just didn't know, and now they do.
That's right.
And what do you think, you know, captured the imagination of teachers and administrators and students so much that could end up having the, you know, the success that it did?
We used to teach environmental education at a camp here in the hills, and we would take kids out on nature hikes, and I think we developed a style of teaching that was both very informative and yet also very entertaining. And it even amazes us that even now, with all the digital and all of the things that are available to students, that they still relate to these programs so much. Mm. So we feel really blessed that we have not been taken over by the computer age or digital things.
I think we're both kids enough that the things that we really get a kick out of, it's very easy for us to kind of imagine how kids are going to also react to that.
Yeah.
And we're also, our shows are constantly changing, because a lot of times we'll put together a program that we think is just rock solid, and then when you actually give the program, most of the time the kids react just like you think they're going to. But every once in a while something will happen and the kids didn't react to a certain picture, or they really reacted to another picture, and then we'll tear the show apart and we'll go, okay, we need to take this out, but this over here we need to add in because the kids were really interested in this. And so we just really find those aspects that really motivate the kids, get them really enthused about learning about other countries, learning about other cultures, having a more of an open mind for people that are different, and also just thinking about for themselves what their own goals and dreams are. Right. We try to encourage the kids that we tell them that this is our dream. Your dream doesn't have to be to travel around the world on a bicycle. Your dream will probably be completely different. But the important thing is to have faith in yourself and then believe in yourself and to find something that you really have passion for in your life. And then to pursue that. And if you do that, your life is going to be really interesting. You're going to enjoy life. You're always going to enjoy going to work. And that's the greatest gift, I think, to give to people is that whole mindset of finding something that they really love to do.
And we keep the shows, we try to keep it a real mix of people, geography, history, animals, science.
Something gross,
something funny. Yeah. And we've had so many teachers come up to us after the show and say, remember that certain kid that raised their hand for a question at the end? They said they've never raised their hand in class before. And so we really are able to still relate to a really wide variety of kids. In fact, some schools want to have us come in and just be the rewards assembly. Mm-hmm. And we always say, you know, we'd prefer not to do that. We would prefer all the kids to get to see the show instead of just using us as a reward, because the reason some of those other kids aren't in the rewards assembly, maybe they could get something out of the programs that we're presenting. Maybe they would find some value for them. So. Yeah.
There's a freedom to the bicycle too, of that it's very accessible to the kids. They, you know, many of them have bikes, or know someone who does that they, you know, ride around on. All of a sudden traveling becomes something that they can do.
And exactly.
Yeah.
The whole idea of the adventure travel too really captures the student's imagination. And even, like Tess said, even with all the things that are available now and all the great video and films of the rest of the world, there's something about having a live person right there talking to you. They can ask questions at the end. They get to see you and interact with you. And it's really way more powerful than seeing a documentary. You're just kind of spoon-fed. And there's also an aspect to do a slideshow is because you're seeing still images. When the person, the narrator, Tass and I take turns, she does one school, I do another, and who's ever talking, you're telling a story, and so the kids see just an image or two from that story, but then the rest of the story that you tell, it's like reading a book. You have to create that image inside your own mind of what's happening in this story. And so it's actually way more interactive than just watching video, because video, you're just spoon-fed. You don't really have to use your own imagination. It's all right there for you. Yeah. But in telling a good story, you do use your own imagination. And I think that's what really gets the kids, pulls them into the show, because they are a part of the show. They're creating those images in their own mind as they're listening to you.
All right, we better talk about Cuba, because if you're just tuning in, Tass and Bruce are going to be at the Journey in Rapid City April 6th and 8th. And that program is called Cuba Libre. And who wants to start with sort of this trip to Cuba?
Cuba, we just went to last summer, and it's our first trip in a number of years that we did not go on bicycles. We have done other trips not bicycling. We've done some ocean kayaking trips, and we've done a lot of things in the rainforest. But we just wanted to break from our bikes. A longer story, Tass had breast cancer the year before and had radiation, didn't have to have chemo, but she was definitely weakened. And we thought for our next trip, it'd be nice just to do something where it wasn't so taxing. But we also are the kind of people that we have to have a real strong goal. So we decided that our 6 weeks in Cuba, we would take salsa dance lessons. And we wanted to learn salsa dance. So that was our main goal. And it was the funnest trip, I have to say, I think, the funnest trip we've ever done.
It's funny, whenever we tell people we did salsa dancing, if we tell that to a man, they get this deer in the headlights look. And if we tell it to a woman, they go, oh, that's so romantic. I would love to do that.
Men can't quite grasp it yet. It's like, why would you do that?
You're leading the way, Bruce.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Well, it was so fun. We just had wonderful instructors. We went to a couple parts of Cuba that are famous for arts and culture. And we traveled very slowly because on bicycles, we often have to get up every morning at sunrise and get the bikes packed and start riding before sun up. And And so this was a very relaxed. There was napping on this trip. There was
nice.
So and it was great. There's the people in Cuba were even poorer than we would have imagined. Mm. And instead of having dance studios, we would just take dance lessons in people's living rooms. So then we would get to meet the family, the neighborhood, and it was really a great way to be to really experience what's going on in Cuba and making a lot of really good friends. One place we stayed for 2 weeks and just did salsa lessons every day in the same house.
And it was so fun. It was, yeah, very interesting. Salsa, of course, originated in Cuba, and they love to dance there, and it's a wonderful place to go to learn the salsa dance. Let's just say that.
Tass, we talked to someone yesterday about resilience and coming back from hardships or life disruptions and sort of how you reintegrate into your life, and that reminds me of you know, you coming out of your breast cancer and then going to Cuba for salsa dancing. Did you have a sense that this was a very important next step after an arduous journey?
It really was. I felt a really strong need as a photographer that I wanted to go somewhere where I could make photographs nonstop, where I was just immersed in color and the detail that I like when I make my photos. Originally, Bruce proposed that we might do that Walk of St. James across Spain, but the more he was showing me pictures and talking about it, the less I wanted to do it, because it wasn't hitting any of those things for me, and I just felt like I just really wanted to be on fire with my photography. And that's exactly what happened. I don't think I've ever been anywhere where people were so amenable to me making their photos. Every person I asked said, yes, it's okay. And I would even move them to get them into a better light. And so that was really healing for me, just to be making that many photos every day and being surrounded by such an incredible culture.
How is that culture changing now? What sort of signs did you notice of that happening?
Well, the interesting thing is so many people have the response to us, well, it's good that you went to Cuba now before all the Americans go and it gets ruined. And like Bruce said, he goes, it's already ruined. This country has been completely destroyed. It's going to take 15 or 20 years for things to really be better in Cuba. I mean, when you think of 60 years of no repairs on roads or buildings, and right before we got there, the average wage for the average person was $26 a month. Well, when you really think about that, you know, you're not really even able to buy clothes. You can barely buy food for your family. So they actually really need Americans to come there, and they want Americans to come there.
We saw so many articles, New York Times, different things saying that there was just a glut of Americans going to Cuba. And I don't know where they got that, because we were there for 6 weeks and we saw less than 10 Americans. And they were all in Havana and in the town of Trinidad. That's the only two towns in all of Cuba that we saw another American. Lots of other foreigners, of course, people from Europe, lots of people from Mexico, lots of people from Argentina, Canada. But no Americans. And everybody was so gracious to us and so friendly and so open to us as Americans. They all said that they would love to see, to meet more Americans, to have Americans come. And so I think just each year, the infrastructure of the country is going to improve slightly, but it's going to be slow. And yes, there are going to be one or two places in Cuba probably that will be overrun with Americans, but it's going to be at one little tiny part of Havana. The whole rest of the country, it's a big country. There's a lot of people. And I think Americans can rest assured that even if you can't make it for another year or two, you've always wanted to go to Cuba, don't worry. It's not going to get ruined. In fact, when you get there, there's just going to be a few more nice restaurants and a few more nice things that are really catering to tourists. And some of the little things that make it a little harder right now to travel in Cuba are just going to ease up and become less of a burden. Not that there's any real big burdens there now. But, you know, the buses are pretty bumpy and hard, and the colectivo taxis are very infrequent, and so it's a little tricky getting around, but not real hard.
Tass, we have about 30 seconds left. Let's just leave folks with some advice on how to embark on their own adventure. What sort of attitude do you need to pack?
You just need to believe in yourself and realize that the world is actually a much friendlier place than what a lot of our news would lead us to believe, and you just need to have faith in that and realize that people in the world are really, really good people. And bad things can happen here in the U.S., but I think the odds of anything bad happening in another country is really minimal. And it's an exciting world out there.
Tass Thacker and Bruce Junik. They're going to be at the Journey in Rapid City April 6th and 8th. The program is Cuba Libre. You can talk to them, see the photographs that they have, and we appreciate both of your time.
Thanks so much.
Oh, I was going to say, well, our website real quick is www.imagesoftheworld.com.
All right. If you're in Vermilion, check it out.
There you go.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.